Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC, offering a broad range of cardiac and vascular treatments in our community. More information is available at upmc.com/centralpaheart.
Welcome back to The Spark. I'm Scott Lamar. There is an all-too-familiar pattern that develops after a school shooting like the one in Nashville earlier this week that resulted in the deaths of 3 9-year-old students and 3 adults. There's the news coverage, the questions about why and how it could and still does happen, thoughts and prayers sent to the victims and their families, and calls for stricter gun laws. And then nothing happens until the next shooting. But something else that is occurring across the country is schools are threatened with violence, either a shooting or a bomb threat. It happened again this week nationwide. In Pennsylvania, there were about 10 schools that we know of, maybe more, that received threats. With us to discuss what has become known as swatting and school safety are Joseph Walsh, an assistant professor of computer science and criminal justice at DeSales University. Professor Walsh is also a police officer. And Jeff Tomlinson, criminal justice and homeland security professor at DeSales. And Mr. Tomlinson is a former supervisor of the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force in Philadelphia. I want to welcome both of you to the program today. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
All right, so let me ask this question. I mean, I think that this is one that a lot of people probably have opinions on and can figure out on their own, but I'll ask the question anyway. Why is it that after an event like the school shooting in Nashville and the others in Uvalde and Newtown and all these places, why is it that there are copycats? There are people who feel that they have to somehow either get out of school or bring attention to themselves or attention from something else, that they're doing this, they're calling in threats or bomb threats. Professor Walsh, let me ask you, why? Do we know why? Okay, we are having problems with Professor Walsh's phone. Let me start with Professor Tomlinson then. Professor Tomlinson, do you know why? You have a theory on why.
It's always a question that's asked, and it's always a difficult one to answer. There's a variety of reasons, and there's been a lot of research on this and books written about this. You know, as far as the copycat, it could be as simple as students not wanting to take an exam. It may be as simple as students getting together and say, let's try this, more as a prank than reality, which puts a lot of pressure on the school districts and school safety, because you never know which one is the real one. So you have to take each one seriously. And within context of the threat and nature of it and how particular and exact it is, or is it more generic? So it's a very difficult question with a lot of possible answers.
So when you say each one has to be taken seriously, does that mean that every time a threat is called in or sometimes, and we're going to be talking with Professor Walsh about this, sometimes they come in via email or some other way. Does that mean that the schools have to shut down the school, the kids have to be evacuated and checked for bombs or these threats? Does that happen every single time?
So it goes school district to school district in Pennsylvania. The school district that I work for in particular for several years in Montgomery County, working with local law enforcement, no. We would take a look at the threat and see exactly what it said. Did the individual or individuals who make the threat actually have the means and the capability and the access to carry out the act that they're talking about? And so that will determine whether you're going to shut the whole building down or the district down as far as a threat, or is it a threat made, but they don't have the ability to carry out what the threat actually is, if that makes sense.
And I know all these situations are different, but typically when a shooting has actually occurred, has there been a threat ahead of time?
So there is no exact science to this. sometimes there's a threat ahead of time. But really, what school safety is about is looking at should that we have seen something before an incident occurred. And so for the district that I worked for, I had a close relationship with the guidance counselors to see if there was any anomalies that they were seeing, to bring it to my attention, because I may have a piece of information that they don't know. They may have a piece of information that I don't know. And so we would have frequent meetings and conversations with the guidance counselors across the district, for example, to try and be ahead of those types of things. We had another program, See Something, Say Something, which was an app that the students could anonymously provide information to me or to the guidance counselors for fear of peer pressure. Why did you, you know, rat somebody out? Why did you turn somebody in? We had a lot of success with that app and See Something, Say Something program in order to really assess true threats. But really, sometimes it's just a matter of identifying the student and getting that student help.
That See Something, Say Something was an app that the Pennsylvania Attorney General's office implemented. And from what I recall, most of the time when students were reporting something, it had many more times had to do with bullying than with the potential for violence. Did you find that as well?
I did find that as well. However, you know, these are in stepping stones in the sense of a bullying could turn into a more serious situation. Not that bullying isn't serious, but it could lead to the next stage with somebody taking action beyond just the bullying. And so those are always indicators. There's always tips. There's always ways to direct you in a proactive way versus reactive way to address a problem.
Professor Joseph Walsh, an assistant professor of computer science and criminal justice at DeSales, is with us now. Professor Walsh, we were talking about these calls coming in, sometimes emails coming in with threats. Do the people who commit these crimes, and that's what they are crimes making these threats, do they ever get away with it?
Unfortunately, sometimes we do see that they get away with it, but a lot of times we are able to make arrests. And actually, I just saw they made an arrest yesterday in a swatting, several swatting incidents over 20 calls, which I thought was from this week, but actually these calls happened last summer. And so they made an arrest of a person who lives in Washington State. So sometimes we're able to track this person down and figure out where they are and then make that arrest.
This person in Washington State, did they make a threat here in Pennsylvania?
They did. It actually looks like they made threats in several states: Ohio, California, Kentucky, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Tennessee. So they had 20 different calls at least over a 3-month period all throughout the United States.
Now, what does a person in Washington get out of making threats to multiple schools in multiple states?
I think sometimes maybe they like seeing the publicity. They like seeing the news. That they're out there, you know, maybe they enjoy causing the psychological trauma to the victims of these calls. But it's interesting, how do they pick their targets, right? If you're in Washington State, why are you picking these other schools? Is there something about them that makes them an interesting target, or is it sort of random?
Is that a federal crime if it's across state lines like that?
It is. They can be charged federally, and it's also in most states there are laws that would prohibit that type of behavior. In Pennsylvania, we have false alarms to agencies of public safety, which would make this a crime. But certainly if they're using a computer or the internet, they're certainly crossing state lines, and then they could be charged federally.
With what? I mean, I think about mail fraud being a federal crime when communications are used across state lines. What would the charges be?
Yeah, so in the federal system, there's a computer crime. It's called the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is kind of a catch-all if you use a computer to commit a crime. So that may be what we see them charged with. And then, of course, if there's other underlying crimes with it as well, you can see those added on.
Professor Walsh, you use the term swatting. What is swatting?
So swatting traditionally has been when you try to send a SWAT team to a person's house. We've seen this a lot with video games. So when you have people that are doing online gaming, if they have someone who's upset with them in some way, swatting has been where they basically call in an emergency. It could be that there's a hostage situation or someone has been shot at the house of the person they're targeting, which tries to elicit, you know, a large scale police response. But more recently, we've seen these with the schools. There's really not a specific target in general. With traditional swatting, we saw them looking for that specific gamer that they were unhappy with. But here it seems to be more generally just causing a disturbance and causing alarm. It doesn't seem like there's a specific person they're trying to target.
From what I understand, this is like the ultimate thrill for someone who does it, that they could get a SWAT team out to the location that that they're targeting.
Yeah, absolutely. For whatever reason, they enjoy, you know, upsetting people and potentially causing that threat to the person, you know. And unfortunately, there's been incidences where people have been killed because of these incidents, because they're sending the police to a house where there's not actually a problem. There's confusion. People don't understand what's happening. And then that can lead to them being injured.
Yeah, I was about to ask whether there is a danger in whether it's swatting or just a student calling in a threat. Is there danger? Could there be danger?
I would say there's definitely danger. You have not only the police response, you know, when we drive to a call of that nature, we're going to be using lights and sirens. We may be going through red lights. So it's certainly creating a traffic hazard to anyone who's on the road between wherever you're starting from and wherever that call is. And then really the problem we've seen previously in swatting is that the police are given bad information and the person whose house they're responding to really have no information. So the police are being told there's a person inside with a gun and they're killing people. But the person who's actually inside the house has no idea that the police are even responding there because there's not actually anything wrong. And so when they react to the police, they're not going to react appropriately because they don't realize that there's anything wrong. They have no idea that the police are there. They may think it's someone playing a joke on them, or they might think it's a burglar. You know, there's a lot of things that can go wrong there because of that bad information.
Incredible. Professor Tomlinson, let me ask you, this is the big question, and we wrestle with it as a nation all the time. Answers to why there are so many school shootings, I mean, the why is a very difficult one to answer. But what can we do to make kids safer? That's the big question. And I guess from your point of view, that you have to look at school safety and security at schools. What are schools doing? What can they do better?
So it comes down to what the school board wants to do, what the school administrators want to do, and what the parents want collectively. How do they want their school to be secured? So you look at the what's called the pillars of school safety. Physically, you have the building. What can you do to, I would say, what I call harden that target without making it look like a fort, without making it look like a prison? Is there ways to harden the building or schools to make it more difficult if someone does try to enter the building? So, for example, what we did in the district I worked, there was 8 buildings across the district, about 7,000 students. Every school, we put in what I would call a man trap at the front entrance. In other words, you could get into the first foyer, but you could not get beyond until you completed the process of what's called a visitor system, putting your license into the system. Are you a parent at the school? Do you have an appointment at the school? You did not get any further than that foyer area in any of our schools until you were, quote, approved by a sponsor, whether it's a teacher, guidance counselor, et cetera. That foyer was fortified with bullet-resistant glass. So you had to make a decision if you were going to come into our building. Did you really belong there? We put access control at every door entrance, and we gave every police officer in the township in their patrol car access badges. They could get access into the building. So if there was an event, they didn't have to come running around to the front door. They weren't running into locked doors. They could quickly get into the building. What we also did was we gave the police department on an as-needed basis the access to our camera system. So if there was a threat called in, they could immediately look inside our building and do their own assessment of what the potential issues might be. So there's a lot of things that you can do with the building itself from a physical structure perspective, because that's always going to be there. A student resource officer may be on campus, may not be on campus. Police officer may or may not be walking through. But the building itself is always there. So we started with the building and worked our way out. The next would be the school climate, right? What is going on in the school? High school is different than middle school, is different than elementary school. Really important to be keyed into the students, the guidance counselors, the principals of what's the atmosphere like. And then particular student issues. And mainly at the high school and middle school, more than the elementary school. However, elementary schools, it could be a custody issue. There could be things going on. So we would make sure that we were aware of these different issues across the district and then try to address them. I mean, I could go on and on, but that kind of gives you a flavor for it.
Now, you mentioned bullet-resistant glass. The shooter in Nashville shot her way into the front door. Would bullet-resistant, I noticed you didn't say bulletproof, would bulletproof, or excuse me, bullet-resistant glass withstand shots from, multiple shots from an AR-15?
So, yes and no, depending on how much money the school district wanted to spend. You always hate to put a price tag on it, but we have to look at it realistically. The main goal for, from my perspective, is to slow the person down. Nothing is going to be 100%. So a school safety officer, school district has to determine, on an average, for example, our school district, police were there within 5 to 7 minutes. So all our drill, all our practice was making sure that we were safe in that 0 to 7 minutes. So if I put bullet-resistant protective glass in, it's going to at least slow the person down while the officers are on their way.
I hate to say it, but it sounds like there's still that nothing is foolproof, put it that way, and it still sounds like if a shooter really wanted to get in and were determined, that they could find a way.
So there's always, right, we would always have, or not always, but often you have employees who prop open a door. Try to be strict on that. Don't prop open doors. We have them locked down for a reason. The way we set up our buildings, to get to a classroom, you had to go through two doorway systems. When we would go into a lockdown, those doors were locked, and unless you had access control, you couldn't get to them. The whole idea was to build at least two layers of protection between the person, the intruder, and the students and staff. And we were pretty successful in every building. It cost some money, but in the end, that would slow the person down. It doesn't mean they won't get into the building, but their ability to move around once they're in the building is extremely limited.
What about the students? You know, we've heard about student intruder drills. What have the students been told about a possible intruder?
So every districts try different philosophies, let's say. The Pennsylvania State Police actively support run, hide, fight scenario, right? If you can run away from the problem and get away from the problem, go. If you can't, lock yourself down in a safe place, and then the last resort is to fight. Some people use the ALICE program, alert, lockdown, inform, counter, evacuate. But the main thing is drilling and practice. We would do that often so that the students knew that they were to, in a lockdown, go to the room would be locked down. They knew there would be a second barrier between them and the problem, and we would practice this several times a year at every school. The same with at lunchtime, right? Where would the students go if there was a lockdown during lunch? So these are all things that you really have to practice. In fact, some of them I would videotape, and the reason I would videotape is I could play it later for the administration, and we could see where our weaknesses were to try and do our best to barriers between the threat and the students. But practice. And I have to say, our students in our district were pretty good in knowing exactly what to do based on where they were in the building.
Notice we're not talking about new gun laws or mental health or any of the reasons that trauma that maybe the shooter has gone through. That is something that we can discuss and we have discussed in other conversations. But just as far as trying to make the schools as safe and secure as we can, Professor Walsh, you're also a police officer. How close is the local police department to the local schools in making these kind of plans?
I think it really depends on the individual, school districts and the different police departments. I know that in my experience, we have some officers who have worked really hard with the schools to prepare. We have floor plans. We have, as Professor Tomlinson mentioned, key cards so that we can access a school very quickly. We have done active shooter training in the school at nighttime when there's no students there, where, the officers, we can pretend and practice responding to situations. So I think that preparedness is really important. We have a alarm system in our county in every school where they can, rather than trying to find a phone and dial 911 and waiting to get connected and waiting to speak to the dispatcher, they can just press a button and the 911 center is immediately alerted. And that alarm goes out to all of the officers, and the 911 center can even listen in to what's happening in the school without anyone saying anything. They can just kind of monitor that background noise. So I think it's really important to have that preparedness in place to make sure that you're ready if something happens.
One of the saddest posts I saw on social media this week was the day after the shooting in Nashville, where a parent said one of the most frightening times is dropping your kids off at school the day after a school shooting. And I can, my kids are adults now, but I can only imagine what that's like. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Joe Walsh is an assistant professor of computer science and criminal justice, and Jeff Tomlinson, criminal justice, homeland security professor, both at DeSales University. I want to thank both of you for being with us today.
Thanks for having
you.
Thanks for listening to The Spark on WITF, your home for NPR and discovering all things local. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.